Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer Live.
Well, good morning. I pray that you're enjoying this beautiful Saturday in the upper Midwest. Almost feels like summer's just around the corner this weekend. If you were one of the wonderful listeners who called in during our share event this week, we want to say thank you so much for supporting the ministry of Faith Radio. And if you didn't have a chance to join us for the share event and you believe in what God is doing through Faith Radio, well, we would still welcome your best gift of any amount. Just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the donate button to find out more. Well, coming up on today's program, we're going to be featuring one of my favorite recent interviews. I'll be talking to my buddy, author, speaker, and family expert, Bill Farrell, about his latest book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man. And guys, Bill is somebody I really respect, and he has some great advice for you and me today. And ladies, you stick around too, because Bill will provide some key insights into the man in your life, whether you are married or dating, or maybe you have an adult son. Stick around. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on Faith Radio. But as we start off today, I've got a question for you. Are you concerned about the future of religious liberty in this country? Have you been paying attention to what's been happening to Christian business owners and government officials who have dared to stand up for a biblical view of marriage and sexuality? You know, it has not been pretty over the past few months. And if you want to learn more about some of these attacks on religious liberty, let me encourage you to visit the Family Research Council's website. That is frc.org. Now, if we are going to be completely honest, we need to acknowledge that what is happening in this country right now is a head-on collision between the freedom to practice one's religious faith, your freedom to practice your faith, and the so-called right to homosexual marriage in this country. And as I talk to people about this issue, I have found that many Christians and even many pastors don't feel confident when explaining why they believe that natural heterosexual marriage between a man and a woman should be protected and defended. And many of us have a difficult time explaining why we believe that homosexual marriage, gay marriage, is not a good thing, why it's not a good thing for men, for women, for children, or for society as a whole. So today, I'd like to spend a little bit of time equipping you on this issue. I want to give you some persuasive arguments that you can use when you are engaging with a person who is on maybe, let's say, the left side of the political spectrum on this issue. Somebody who believes that gay marriage is a good thing and who believes that anyone who doesn't support it is a bigot and a hater. Boy, we've heard those words thrown around a lot lately by the so-called tolerant crowd. Okay, so when we consider this same-sex marriage experiment, and it is an experiment, it's important to remember that what we're talking about here is a radical redefinition of the human family. Let me say that again. It is a radical redefinition of the human family. Up until the last few milliseconds of human history, no society anywhere in the world at any time in recorded history has ever affirmed homosexual marriage. Homosexual unions have never, never been considered a normal, morally equal, morally valid part of any culture in the world. So think about this. If you have a child or a grandchild in a public school right now, have you been to visit their classroom? In many classrooms across the country, you will find a globe of the world, typically used to teach world history or geography. If you were to spin that globe and stop it and put your finger down on any inhabited landmass, what you would find is that marriage is, and marriage has always been, about men and women committing themselves to each other and to raising the next generation. It doesn't matter whether you visit the remotest part of Siberia or a tiny little Polynesian island, you're not going to find any culture where the basic family unit is headed up by two men or two women. But in the last few years, a few Western countries and a few state judges and politicians here in the U.S. have been arrogant enough to believe that we can take marriage and we can refigure it, we can dismantle it, we can dismember it, and we won't suffer any negative consequences. Now, when we are discussing same-sex marriage with somebody on the other side of the debate, I think it's really critical that we clearly articulate what this debate is really about and what it's not about. Let me tell you what it's not about. It's not about whether gays and lesbians are nice people or good citizens. Some are, some aren't, just like heterosexuals, right? We got good apples and bad apples in every bunch. It's not about whether gays and lesbians can form loving relationships. Of course they can. Now, we might argue that they're not experiencing love as God intended for it to be experienced, but they can certainly share feelings of affection for each other. It's not about whether gays and lesbians can be loving parents. Okay, there are nurturing, caring gay couples raising children all across this country. Now, whether they are providing those children with what they truly need is another matter, which we will talk about in just a bit. And it's not, the debate is not about whether gays and lesbians should be treated with respect and dignity. Of course, every member of the human race should be treated with respect and dignity. And as Christians, we should be the first to uphold that, right? So those are the things that this gay marriage debate is not about. Here is what I believe the debate is about. First of all, it's about whether we have the right to redefine marriage so it's elastic enough to include any grouping of adults regardless of gender. And I use the word grouping there for a particular reason. It's about whether we acknowledge the wonderful human diversity expressed in the two genders, male and female. You know, diversity is quite a buzzword in our culture these days. But if you think about it, the same-sex relationship has no diversity, at least when it comes to gender. It's basically a genderless relationship. This debate is also about whether men and women complement and complete each other in their differences. My wife and I are very different, but we complete each other. She has strengths that I don't have, and I have strengths that she doesn't have, and we help each other grow through our weaknesses. So men and women have this amazing ability to complement and complete each other through those differences. This debate is also about whether mothers and fathers play unique and irreplaceable roles in the lives of their children, precisely because of their gender. There are things that mothers bring to a child and fathers bring to a child that are very unique and special and different. And finally, this same-sex marriage debate is about whether there are compelling societal reasons, cultural and societal reasons, to define marriage as one thing and not define it as another. So let's take a moment to take a look at the institution of marriage for a minute. As Christians, of course, we believe that heterosexual marriage was established by God, right? Genesis 1:27, it tells us, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." Now, we could spend an entire seminary course unpacking that statement, but let's just focus on the second half of that verse. God created human beings as two distinct complementary genders. Some theologians like to use the term co-humanity. What they mean by that is that men, in and of themselves, do not display the complete image of God, and women, in and of themselves, do not display the complete image of God. And Jesus made that clear, very clear to the Pharisees in Matthew 19. Here's what he said. "Haven't you read that at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one." Now here, Jesus clearly and powerfully spells out God's intent for marriage. God created human beings as male and female, and marriage unites those two complementary sides of humanity into one flesh. Now, since marriage was created by God, it naturally follows that it is going to be a universal human institution. And even a non-Christian, even an atheist, can pick up an anthropology textbook and examine any culture at any time in history, and find that families look remarkably similar. Now, there are a few societies that have practiced polygamy, but the core of the family, the core, has always consisted of men and women raising the next generation in a cooperative way. And marriage is not just a Christian institution either. Don't get caught up in that debate, because every one of the major world religions upholds and honors marriage between a man and a woman. You know, in the public debate that's been going on over same-sex marriage, you a lot of times hear from the gay organizations that gay couples should be given the same state and federal benefits that are given to heterosexual couples. And that's beginning to happen. But it's critical to remember that the reason society provides benefits to married couples is because marriage provides benefits to society. Let me say that again. The reason our government provides benefits to married couples is because marriage provides benefits to society. We have a virtual mountain of social science data showing how natural marriage between a man and a woman benefits adults, children, and society. And there is no evidence that homosexual marriage would provide these things. In fact, in some ways, homosexual relationships are qualitatively different from heterosexual relationships. Next week, I'm going to tell you about some of this evidence that we're talking about, the way that marriage benefits society, the way it benefits you and me and our kids, because it is overwhelming. Well, it's 11:15. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer, and coming up next, an encore presentation of my interview with Bill Farrell as we dive into his book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man. Stick with us.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And you can join the conversation by calling us at 877-93-FAITH. Why don't you jot that down, 877-93-FAITH, and you can find out more about Faith Radio at myfaithradio.com. Well, my guest this hour is Bill Farrell. Bill has been influencing lives for over 25 years as a senior pastor, a youth pastor, a radio talk show host, a community leader, a very sought-after conference speaker. He is the author of a whole bunch of books, just a few of them, The 10 Best Decisions a Man Can Make, and he and his wife, Pam, have written more than 30 books together, including their big hit, Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti, which I think has sold about 300,000 copies now, and then a great book on intimacy in marriage called Red Hot Monogamy. Bill and Pam have been married for more than 30 years. They've raised three young men who love Jesus and athletics. And today he joins us to dive into his new book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man, Success in Relationships, Work, and Your Walk with God. Bill, welcome to Faith Radio.
Hey, Bill. It's good to be with you.
I appreciate so much you taking time on this weekend after a holiday. And I know you have a busy travel schedule, and you and Pam all around the country. Before we dive into the new book, I'd love for our listeners to learn a bit more about the ministry that you and Pam have called LoveWise. Tell us a little bit about that, when it got started, and what it's all about.
Well, LoveWise is it really grows out of our desire to connect love and wisdom together. Because we know people fall in love all the time. People want to be in love. They want to love their kids. They want to have great friendships. But that doesn't mean they have the wisdom to actually pull it off. And we didn't name it LoveWise until about 10 years ago, but when we look back on our life, it really has been the theme of our life ever since we got married. Because when we got married, we were 20 years old. We were very confident of three things. We knew that we loved Jesus with all our heart. We knew that we loved each other. And we knew that we had no idea what we were doing.
You did have some struggles in the first couple years of marriage, didn't you?
We did, because we both came from homes that were not real healthy. I'd love to tell you that, you know, I come from generations of believers who have done it right and have been very diligent about their faith and their relationships, but it's not true. I came from a home with parents who definitely love each other, but my mom struggles with a lot of fear, and she's a very strong leader. And so every decision in my home growing up was made out of fear. And my mom and dad, their relationship skills were pretty low. And Pam grew up in a home with an alcoholic father who was two guys. When he wasn't drinking, he's the best guy in the neighborhood. When he was drinking, he was violent and unpredictable. And so when we got together, we were like, all we know is we don't want to do things like the homes we grew up in. And we just started on a pursuit to figure out, how does this thing work? And we actually used to corner couples at church that looked like they liked each other and had some experience. And we would ask them, like, is your love for each other real? And if it is, how did you do it? And a whole lot of people they wouldn't know how to write books, they wouldn't know how to make a presentation, but they had some real life wisdom that they could share with us over lunch. And we just started realizing, wow, there are some things you can do in marriage and family that help make it work that anybody can learn if they're diligent enough to do it. And so we have been speaking together at conferences. We've been writing books. Over the years, we've done lots of work with individual couples, just helping them learn how relationships work. So connecting the love that they have for each other with the wisdom to be able to pull it off in their everyday life.
You know, something you just said, Bill, makes me think of the many young couples who might be listening right now who are going through similar struggles, and that there are probably couples at their church that they could reach out to, maybe with the help of a pastor connecting them. Not just, you know, you were brave. You walked up to people and asked them those questions. But
I did.
Yeah, and yet I know.
The beauty of it is it usually led to them taking us to lunch. Which was like a double blessing, because young couples being taken out to lunch, that's really fun, too.
Such a deal. Well, give a challenge to the young couple who's listening right now, who's maybe in the first year or two of marriage, who, you know, is finding that marriage isn't all they thought it was cracked up to be, and they're realizing they've kind of hit a brick wall, and they're looking for help. Obviously, your books are tremendously helpful, but what can they do in their church this Sunday? How can they start on that path to find some help, to find some mentoring?
Well, the first thing I would say, Bill, is thanks for letting me bring this up, because it's such a valuable resource. There are so many couples sitting in our churches who they know how marriage works. They just don't know how to do it. They don't know how to explain it to anybody in a formal setting. And so my first challenge to young couples is keep it casual. Don't go to your pastor or the leader of your family ministry and say, you know, I need to be schooled up. I need to be trained. I need to be mentored. Just go to them and say, hey, we're trying to figure out how this relationship things work. Do you know anybody we could talk to who could just give us some real world advice? And then I would also have young couples say to that leader, you know, it would be a really good thing if some of the more experienced couples were willing to just have lunch with some of us younger couples so we could ask questions. And what I find is when you make it too formal, when you make it a class or you make it a mentoring situation, people who have some really good advice get intimidated by it just because of the wording.
Sure.
But if you were to look at a couple who's married 20, 25 years who are doing well, if you were to look them in the eyes and say, hey, would you be willing to just make yourself available to take someone to lunch? Almost everybody can do that. And so most couples will say yes to that as long as they don't have to produce a lesson or they don't have to decide ahead of time what they're going to share. And if young couples would just sit down and start asking questions, and it can be simple questions, like what do you do first thing in the morning that helps you get along as a couple? Mm-hmm. What are the habits that you have that you do on a weekly basis that help you stay in love? What are the things you've done in the past you'd never do again because they weren't a good idea? Mm-hmm. And you'll be amazed when you ask those simple questions, the wisdom that people are holding that they suddenly now begin to share.
You know, that's the beauty of intergenerational ministry. Unfortunately, and I know you know this with your background as a pastor in church leadership, in many churches, we are so segmented by age and by Sunday school class that oftentimes the young couples, the only time they see somebody who's 20, 30 years older is, you know, sitting in the congregation. They've never met them.
Right.
And it can be intimidating to go up and introduce yourself. And I'm starting to see some churches that are realizing the importance of the older generation teaching the younger, which, what do you know? It's in the Bible, and Paul talks about that.
And let me share with you one of the things I did when I was a senior pastor is once a year I would have a meeting of just the men in the church. And we, of course, would eat because when men get together, they want to eat food.
Oh, yeah.
So it would normally be a breakfast. And so we would have this meal together. And instead of bringing in a speaker, I would take the guys in the church who had real life experience. And I would try to pick the guys who were 55 and above, and I would just put them on a panel, and I would have them tell stories. So a lot of them had experience from either World War II or the Korean War. A lot of them had experience of actually homesteading in California.
Wow.
So they would tell the story of how their family moved and just took over a plot of land. I'd have them tell stories about their first vehicle and when their family moved from horses to engines. And just getting those guys to tell stories drew the younger guys to them. And now it wasn't that guy sitting over in the pew with gray hair. It was, wow, that guy's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped foster the relationships between the generations and helped the young guys trust the wisdom of some of these wiser guys that were all around them, but they didn't know how to connect with them.
You're painting a great picture for every church, and I pray that those who are listening who are in church leadership will try to implement some of those things in their own church body. Throughout the years, Bill, you've learned a lot about the way guys operate.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you apply those truths to your new book, Seven Simple Skills for Every Man.
Well, you know, the real heart for this book came out of the fact that I've raised three sons. And you were sharing your experience about Christmas. Like, this was a big Christmas for us because all three of my sons came home, which, you know, when you're raising sons, you prepare yourself for them to spend holidays at their wife's house.
Mm-hmm.
With her family. Well, they all came home this year.
Oh, no.
And my youngest son got engaged right here in San Diego, California. So we had a huge celebration. So for years I've been asking the question, how do you help boys become men? And a couple of things I realized. First, the things that help us become the men that God wants us to be, a lot of them are really simple. And as I interacted with my boys over the years and their friends, I realized there are some things in life that should be well known. Like, you should look people in the eyes and ask them the question. They should just know the answer because it's so common that everybody knows it. And yet the information has gotten lost in the shuffle. And so I thought, okay, when I write a book for men, I'm gonna point out the simple things that once you hear them, you're going to go, oh, yeah, of course that's what being a man is all about. And I wanted to put it in terms that the average person could understand. And so I just boiled it down to 7 simple skills. And the point of it is, when men keep things simple, they tend to maintain the power of their life. And when men make things too complicated, they get lost in the shuffle, and their influence actually starts to minimize.
And I've seen that over and over again, both in my own life and the lives of other men that I know. Bill, you start off your book talking about some of the don'ts that men have been taught over the years. What are those don'ts, and how do they impact us?
Well, the point of the first chapter is that men were made to be passionate. Like, it was interesting, the question that you read. But great answer, by the way, to the mom asking about how do I help my boys, you know, kind of harness this this aggressive approach to life that they have. And the reality of men is they're passionate. We're passionate about work. We're passionate about our families. We're passionate about God if we have a relationship with Jesus. We're passionate about making something happen in life. And because that passion has often gotten out of control, we have responded with telling men that we just need to not do certain things. Like, don't be selfish. Don't work so hard. Don't lust. Don't watch so much TV. Don't think about sex so often. Just don't. And that's like trying to turn off a very powerful instrument, whether it's a technology instrument or a vehicle. It's like turning it off and not using the engine anymore. What we need to teach men to do is embrace the fact that they're passionate and harness it so that it's valuable in life, not creating damage.
Bill, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll have more with Bill Farrell here in just a bit on the Faith Radio Network. If you give us a call, we have 3 copies of the book to give away. Our number is 877-93-FAITH. Give us your contact info, and at the end of the hour, we'll have a drawing for 3 copies of 7 Simple Skills for Every Man by Bill Farrell. Stick around. We'll be right back after this break.
Right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. I want to say hi to our friends who are listening on Faith 1200 in Fargo-Moorhead today, or maybe you're tuned in to Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls. Thank you for taking Faith Radio with you this weekend. By the way, you can find our entire broadcast schedule at myfaithradio.com. You heard Dick Whitworth mention some of our live programs Monday through Friday. You don't want to miss Austin Hill in the morning, 6 to 8. Neil Stavem's Connecting Faith, noon to 1. And then Susie Larson. I love Susie Larson. Gosh, she's just the best. 3 to 5 every weekday afternoon here on the Faith Radio Network. Well, my guest is Bill Farrell, and Bill has joined us to talk about his new book, 7 Simple Skills for Every Man, Success in Relationships, Work, and Your Walk with God. And Bill, before we had the break there, we were just starting to talk about a man's passions and why it's so important to focus your passion. So let's dive into that for a bit. There's a danger in focusing your passions in the wrong way, but if you get it right, man, oh man, the things you can accomplish for God's kingdom are truly amazing.
And in fact, there's a story that I keep in mind to remind me that the passions in a man's heart, they're so powerful that they're either going to do great good or they're going to create damage. And it was an opportunity Pam and I had to go over to Germany, and we stayed with a family while we were there. And as I got to the house where this family lived, there was a Mini Cooper sitting in the driveway. So at dinner, I looked at the dad and I said, So I noticed you have a Mini Cooper sitting in your driveway, and the Autobahn is not far from here. So when are we when are we going out?
Wait a minute. For those listeners that don't know, at least it used to be, I don't know if it's still true, that the Autobahn doesn't have a speed limit. So I don't know if that's changed. But
well, it was still true when I was there.
Oh, man.
So his 18-year-old son said, well, I'll take you out. And I know. I'm like, oh, no, I just committed to go out now with an 18-year-old driver. I can't believe I've done this. But, you know, as a man, when you throw the challenge out, you got to keep it up. So after dinner, me and the son are heading out the door, and his dad said to him something I've never said to my kids. He said, no going over 130 miles an hour. So we got in the car, And we headed out on the Autobahn, and he was driving 129 miles an hour.
Oh, no.
And as we're enjoying this experience, two Porsches passed us like we were standing still.
Oh, man.
And as they went running by, my first thought was, oh, I want to be in that car. Because it was just awesome the way it was running.
Oh, God.
But then we passed one of those Porsches 10 minutes later, and it was a big heap of flaming metal on the side of the road.
Oh, no.
Because the driver lost respect for the power of the vehicle.
Mm.
And see, that's what happens in a man's life. If we respect the power, the passions that God's put in us, and we seek to harness it, so we focus it on our career, and we focus it on our relationship with God, and we focus it on serving our families, and we focus it on making our communities better, we accomplish great things, and people look at our lives and say, wow, I want to be like that guy. But if we let our passions get out of focus, they create damage. And they break up families, and they disappoint the people that we love, and they create habits and addictions in our life to take the rest of our life to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, the tendency is to say, well, we need to calm down the passion. But you would never say to somebody with a Porsche, hey, you need to take the engine out of that car. It's too much. You just need to like sit it in your driveway, but don't ever drive it. That would be silly. And it's the same way with a man's life. We want men to live passionate lives, but we want it to be under control of the Holy Spirit and focused so that it's creating great good in this world rather than creating damage.
Boy, well said. You talk about in the book the redeemed bill, the responsive bill, and the restless bill. Why don't you flesh those out for us a bit?
Well, those really were sparked in my mind by a conversation I had with my friend Nate Larkin, who says that as men, because these passions are so strong in our life, we find ways to express them. And if we don't know how to express them in a healthy way, we'll create ways of expressing them. And so I thought, you know, Nate is so right, because I think if all of us men are honest with ourselves, there's part of our life that is so mature and so responsible, like it makes us proud to be this person. But then there's parts of our life that are still just kind of childish and manipulative. And as I looked at my own life, I think, well, there's this part of me that loves to work hard. So I call them responsible. That he loves work, he loves challenges, he loves goals, and I just love getting after stuff in life that I care about. And then there's redeemed Bill, and that's what developed in my life when I met Jesus. I came to know Jesus as my personal Savior because of the movie The Exorcist at age 16.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't grow up in a Christian home, didn't go to church regularly, but I went to that movie and heard it was based on something true. And when I left the movie, I said, if any of that's true, I'm kind of in trouble here because I know nothing about any of this. And it got me reading the Bible, and after reading the Bible for a month, I came across 1 John 4:4 that says, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. And the light went on, and my brother had prayed a prayer about 2 months before me, told me how to receive Christ, and I asked Jesus into my life at 16, and it was a game changer for me. That the fear I grew up around got replaced with this sense of wisdom and real a desire for life and to figure out how this thing works. And so that part of me that knows Jesus just loves to do what's right, loves serving, loves to do the right thing for my family, loves to seek out God's truth, loves to worship, just loves to do all the good things in life. But then there's this part of me, the Bible calls it the old man. There's this part of me that still is kind of self-centered and selfish. And I call him Restless Bill, because he's the Bill that wants life to be easy. He's the Bill that wants to have the fantasy wife who walks in the door and is just nothing but admiration for her husband and is just interested in him all the time, laughs at all his jokes and thinks everything he says is brilliant. And when Restless Bill gets too active, I put expectations and demands on Pam that shouldn't be there. And I think all of us men struggle with that kind of stuff, that we have expressions of who we are that are real noble and honorable, and we have expressions of who we are that can get unhealthy very quickly. And if we don't own up to it and have a plan for keeping that stuff in check, Yeah, I mean, you and I know. We all know stories of people who were living great lives and then just wiped out because of their passions.
Yeah, unfortunately, many Christian leaders have had that downfall, even just in the past year. Some of the things I've read just sadden me greatly. So what's the answer to restless, Bill? What's the answer to the old man? Obviously, the Holy Spirit. You have to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit in your life. But then what are some of the ways that you can allow the Holy Spirit to work and to change the restless, Bill, and to start to shape you into the image of Jesus Christ?
And for the sake of simplifying our conversation, I would say there's three things that will really help a man move forward in this whole thing. The first is admitting that he's passionate. Like when I was a young man, I was kind of embarrassed to say to Jesus, hey, you know, there's some stuff in life I just absolutely love. And because some of it's really noble stuff. Like, I love the Bible. I love worshiping. I love being involved in a vibrant church. But I also love football, and I love cars. And I didn't feel the freedom to say that to Jesus, that these are things I'm passionate about in life. And so owning up to it and just being honest about it is step number one. Step number two, I think, is getting a group of guys in your life who share your perspective. Like, as men, we understand this. Like, we know that we have these drives and desires inside of us. We know that we want to do something worthwhile in life, and we know that we struggle to keep our desires in check. And so if you have two or three guys in your life that you can be honest with and be able to look each other in the eyes and say, hey, you doing okay? And do you have your passions under control? Are they focused in a good direction? That sense of teamwork helps you on the days when you're not doing real well yourself. And then the third thing I think we can do is develop a smarter relationship with Jesus. That too often we as men, we get in a performance relationship with him. Mm-hmm. That we think there's a list of stuff he wants us to do. We're doing our best to do the list. And when we're good on the list, we think God's happier with us. And when we're not keeping up with the list, we think God's really disappointed in us. And when I look at my kids, I think, well, I don't interact with my kids that way. Like, I certainly have desires and goals for my kids, but when they don't perform well, I don't love them less. And I don't have any less desire to spend time with them. So I wrote a chapter in the book on praying like men. And one of the key things in praying like men is to take time to listen to God. And I encourage men, if you want to keep this passion harnessed, get in the habit of saying in your prayer life, God, you go first. And then just sit still and assume that anything that comes to mind after you pray that prayer is something God wants to talk to you about. And what I see men do all the time is we take time to pray, and then we get flooded with thoughts. And some of them are positive, but some of them are pretty negative, and some of them even sound accusatory. And we tend to assume that that is Satan trying to mess up our prayer life. And I challenge men all the time. Now, assume that that's God bringing up issues with you. Because, again, as a dad, if my kids come and talk to me and they have something on their mind, if I know there's something in their life that's holding them back, I'm going to bring it up.
Mm.
And if I can figure that out as a dad, certainly God wants to do that with us. And when you do that, you allow God to be part of your passion for your career and your struggle with lust and the battle you have with anger, if that's an issue for you, and the way you want to love your kids and the frustration you have sometimes over not being able to communicate with them like you would like to. All of that brings God into the middle of that and provides his wisdom for these things in life that matter to us.
Wow. Great advice, Bill. You know, one of the things that I've started doing just in the last year is taking prayer walks.
Yeah.
And I've found, and I've even seen some research on this, about when we are walking, and I think especially as men, because we tend to be active and our mind is, as you said, oftentimes going 1,000 miles a minute. There's something about the act of walking and praying. Now, I realize some of my neighbors think I'm nuts, because if they, you know, I do it quietly. I must admit, I do. I kind of, you know, under my breath, Lord, you know, help me with this. But it does. It helps me to focus versus, and I know this doesn't apply to every guy, but if I'm, you know, just sitting there in my office praying, sometimes my mind just starts to, you know, come up with the answers that I want. Okay, God, here's my suggestion. I think if we did it this way, this would solve it. And Lord, just bless this particular, you know, direction. But when I'm doing a prayer walk, one of the things I often do is I start to focus on God's promises at the beginning of that walk, mm-hmm. and how much He loves me and cares for me and that He wants the best for me. And, you know, you talked about that worry growing up in that environment of worry in your own home. Sometimes I get caught up with worry and anxiety, as many men do, but there's something about focusing on those promises and God's providence and His faithfulness that starts to just let that worry just go away, and then to, you know, honestly enter into a dialogue with Him and confess my mess ups, which I've got plenty of them. And sure. then ask Him to enter into those mess ups and to change me and to make me into the man that He wants me to be.
Well, you know, Bill, you said taking a prayer walk isn't necessarily for everybody, but the principle that you are sharing certainly is. Because what you have just illustrated is you invited God into the things that you like to do. Mm. And you brought Him into the active side of your life, which is a huge part of how men interact with one another, and it helps in their relationship with God. Like, one of my favorite verses when it comes to men and their relationship with God is Psalm 119:32. So Psalm 119:32 says, "I run in the path of your commands, for you have broadened my understanding." And it captures that idea of, as men, we're doers. And so when we interact with God while we're doing something, it tends to connect with who we are. And you know, you've done ministry long enough. You know, if you look at a group of men and say, "Men, let's go do something active," men will go, "Okay, we're in." And if you say to men, "Hey, let's sit down and just like have a cup of coffee and chat," a lot of men are like, "Well, like, what are we going to talk about?" Mm-hmm. And there's natural hesitancy that sets in. And so when we take the activity that we like, so men who are hunters, if they invite Jesus out to go hunting, men who are tinkerers, if they're working in their yard or working on their car or doing something around the house and they invite Jesus into it, if they're working out, taking a walk, riding a bike, if they invite Jesus into the things they like to do, it enhances their relationship with Him.
Mm. Boy, great advice. We're talking to Bill Farrell, and Bill has a new book out called 7 Simple Skills for Every Man, Success in Relationships, Work, and Your Walk with God. We're going to take a quick break, but if you call us, we actually have 3 copies of the book to give away at the end of the hour. The phone number is 877-93-FAITH. Just give us your contact info, name, address, phone number, email, and at the end of the hour, we'll draw for 3 copies of 7 Simple Skills for Every Man. I'm Bill Meyer. This is the Faith Radio Network. We'll take a quick break and be back with a final segment with Bill Farrell after this.
Now back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
I want to say hi to our friends who are listening in Madison, Wisconsin on Faith 1190. Thanks for taking us with you on this Saturday. And also, if you're listening in Waterloo, Iowa on Faith 1090, we appreciate you. Hope you had a wonderful holiday. My guest is Bill Farrell, who is a prolific author and a speaker, and he has a new book out for guys, 7 Simple Skills for Every Man. And Bill, couple of chapters that really intrigue me, which I'd love to just dive into a bit. One is the importance of pursuing a plan, and the other is build what only you can build. Let's talk about those.
So both of those chapters are aimed at helping men not be passive. Because so often in our world, we get criticized so often, and so often that, you know, we start with men get told don't do this, don't do that, and they start to take a passive approach to life, and they start to just react to their families rather than ask themselves, okay, why did God put me here? And 2 things I have found that help men keep those things focused is, first of all, they make some sort of a plan. And a lot of men are like, well, I don't want to get ahead of God. I don't want to do stuff in place of God. And so I don't want to get too crazy about making plans in my life because I don't want to miss God's will. And yet when you look throughout the Bible, men are always making plans. And God's big enough to steer us. So if we're in motion and we're moving and we're actively engaged in life, God's certainly big enough and smart enough to steer us where he wants us to go. And it's part of the purpose of telling the story of Jonah in the Bible. Like Jonah, he didn't think through everything the way he should have, and he certainly was fighting God in the direction he wanted to go, but he made a plan and got in motion, and God got him where he needed to go. Now he got there the hard way.
In the belly of the whale, yes. The hard way, exactly.
And so as men, we were just made to make plans. So we should make plans for our career. We should make plans for our health. We should make plans for our families and for the way we want our kids to turn out, trusting that God will steer us to what he wants us to do as we stay engaged and go through it as wise as we can.
Now, as we're making those plans, Bill, we talked before about the importance of having a couple guys in your life who will speak truth at you. I'm guessing that when we have big plans that involve things like a geographical move or money or a new house or whatever it might be, a new career, we can't, you know, it's important, of course, to be praying about those things, listening to God's voice. But my guess is you would say also seek wise counsel.
Well, that's part of having wisdom. Like if you're going to make plans, you don't run as a renegade if you want to have anybody else involved in your life. So as men, we need to consult our wives. We need to consult our trusted friends. We need to consult people who are more skilled than we are. Because often there's parts of our life we see very clearly, and there's other parts that we are kind of blind to. Like I have this very interesting group of men that I work with, and I recently had a conversation with them where I said, hey, just share with the group where God has gifted you. So the thing you're really good at because God put the gift in your life. And it was amazing to watch the men struggle with that. That a lot of men had either not thought about, wow, what is it that God does in my life that works really well because God's in it? Or they were embarrassed to say. And one of the guys in the group, like it's obvious to all of us that he's really good at networking and connecting people. But when it got his turn to share, he was like, I don't know, guys, there's nothing really special in my life. And all of us looked at him and said, you got to be kidding me. Like every time we talk to you, you're connecting people with common interests. And after a few of us shared, he finally went, yeah, I guess you're right. And so sometimes we just need other people in our life to help us to see clearly what it is that we're supposed to do next. And that's part of being wise in making plans. Because we don't want people to just be reckless in making plans and go, I don't care how it turns out, I'm just going to make a plan. We want them to be wise about it.
Have you noticed, Bill, and you've obviously been working with men, with families for many years, my impression is that as I look at the younger generation, particularly these guys who are single and, you know, in their late 20s, 30s, even into their 40s with this whole extended adolescence thing. And I don't know, part of me says it's cultural. It's the demasculinization of guys, the feminist movement. It's not good to be a man, you know, let your, you know, find your inner woman. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it troubles me when I see these younger men that don't seem to have a plan.
Well, and this ties right into challenging men to build something, because we're raising a generation of people who don't have to work as hard as previous generations. They're much more technologically savvy, and they have this sense that because I interacted with people, I worked hard. And when you look throughout the Bible and you look at history, men have always been builders. Like we have cities because men are builders. We have churches because men are builders. We have the technological networks that this next generation is interacting with because men are builders. And we're in danger of raising a generation of people, of young men who are not building anything. They're just consuming what's already been built. And a man who doesn't build something, and it doesn't have to be with their hands. Like we, whenever we talk about building, people are like, well, I don't do tools well. Well, there's lots of things in life to build because we need lots of systems. We need technology. We do need physical building. But a man who builds harnesses the productivity that God put in his heart. And a man who doesn't build gets confused about what being a man is all about. And so we're raising a generation that doesn't necessarily understand the process of building, and they're consuming more than they're producing.
You know, in the beginning of the book, you share just three brief stories. Tim Westergren, who is the founder of Pandora Radio, Elon Musk, who built SpaceX, Michael Chasen of Blackboard. All three of those guys built something incredible. They took great risks. And they weren't necessarily, you know, building a building. They weren't building a house. They weren't building a skyscraper, but they built incredible things.
That's right. And we're all talking about it because when men build something, we have this sense of admiration. Mm-hmm. So again, it doesn't have to be something physical that you build, but the nature of being a man is we build something. We build families, we build businesses, we build networks, we build interconnectedness between people, we build projects. And when a man builds, he discovers his potential. That it's very interesting watching my sons growing up right now, that since the oldest two are both working as coaches, one at the high school level, one at the college level, the youngest son just graduated from college and is working on his master's degree. And there is a clear difference between the older two and the younger one, because the older two have now spent a few years trying to build a program that helps athletes perform at a higher level, and it's changed who they are for the better.
Hmm.
And my youngest son hasn't started that process of building yet, so he has a lot more theory and a lot less wisdom to work with. And as he enters the phase of actually building something, he's going to develop that same sense of understanding of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need men to be building something, and it's one of the challenges we got to put out there.
Mm. Bill, you've given us some great advice here, and we're just about out of time. Share just real quickly, if you would, in the next minute or so, the importance of acting your age.
And let me just illustrate it with my dad. My dad's 85 years old today. He is struggling with some pretty significant physical difficulties. And when I was growing up, he struggled being a dad. He didn't know how to give advice, didn't really know how to do that because his dad died when he was 17. But today, my dad has embraced the fact that at the end of your life, you become indelible and your main job is to tell the family story. And my dad has decided to start telling the story of our family, and everybody in my family hangs on every word he says. And now that he's 85 years old, he's having the best time of his life in our family.
Wow. Wow. Beautiful.
So even if you haven't done it right all along the way, you can start today acting your age and having big influence.
Mm. Bill, I want to recommend the book to all the guys listening today. Once again, it's Seven Simple Skills for Every Man by Bill Farrell. It's available from Harvest House. Thanks so much for your time, Bill, and may the Lord continue to bless you and your ministry.
Thank you, and the same to you, Bill. You're a great, great asset to all of us.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.